Current state here on WKAR, scientists are noticing increased numbers of a zooplankton in some inland lakes that are, well, just plain slimy. Holopedium glacialis is a mucus-coated microorganism, yuck, that in groups makes a ball of slime, something like clear tapioca pudding, not what you want to encounter in a Michigan lake. The slime can clog water pipes and disrupt the food web. Joining us now to talk about holopedium is Orlando Sarnelli. He's a limnologist and ecologist in MSU's Department of Fisheries and Wildlife. Dr. Sarnelli, welcome to Current State.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, before we get into the slime-making culprit, help us understand in general what zooplankton is.
So, different kinds, but the ones we're talking about are small crustaceans, so related to shrimp and lobster. They range in size from, say, 0.5 millimeter up to about 2.5 millimeters. And they swim around in the open waters, and they eat the algae, the phytoplankton, the microscopic plants.
Okay.
So they're herbivores.
Real common.
Oh, yeah. Every lake has them in abundance.
Okay. Well, a Canadian journal recently published the work of one professor, John Small, who's been looking at Holopedium glacialis in inland lakes near Lake Superior. And it turns out it clogs water pipes, which is a problem for drinking water. Do we have an idea why these are flaring up right now?
Well, according to what I've read, this is a problem for lakes that have very low calcium levels to begin with. And for a variety of sort of geochemical reasons, the calcium is decreasing. A lot of it's due to human activities. So the calcium concentrations are decreasing, and this holopedium just happens to do well or not require very much calcium. Mm-hmm. And the other species that it competes with have a higher calcium requirement. So as the calcium goes down, the competitors go down, and holopedium gets an edge.
So basically, inland lakes have gotten out of balance. What does an overabundance of holopedium do to a lake?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer because there hasn't been very much research on holopedium. It doesn't really occur in the lower peninsula of Michigan at all. It doesn't occur in hard water lakes. Not a lot of people study it because you can't. I don't know that anybody's actually grown it in the laboratory. But it feeds on algae just like Daphnia, which is the more desirable zooplankton, if you want to call it that.
Okay, but it's unclear just how destructive it might be. It's just kind of unpleasant at this point.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, when I was a grad student in Massachusetts, we regularly encountered holopedium in our zooplankton samples, and you know, it's kind of interesting looking. It is kind of jelly-ish, kind of tapioca in your net, and it's a little more difficult to process the sample, that's for sure.
But there's no situations where it's taken over a whole lake or anything really awful like that.
Not the numbers that I've seen. The article that I looked at, the percent abundance of holopedium in the last, it was 30 years, went from about 1% of the zooplankton to about 3%. No, is that right? I'd have to look that up, but it wasn't a huge, maybe it was 10% to 30%. That's probably what it was.
Okay.
So I don't know about taking over. The other thing you got to keep in mind that holopedium is a native species. It's not something that's invading from outside. It's been there. It's just now getting a little more abundant.
And you pointed out to me before we came to air here that this is likely never going to be an issue in the lower peninsula here.
Right.
Can you explain why?
Well, because our lakes all have very high calcium levels, and so that favors Daphnia over holopedium. I don't think anybody knows exactly why holopedium doesn't do well in high calcium lakes, whether that's inhibitory to it directly or it's just being outcompeted by Daphnia. The article I read seems to suggest it's competition from Daphnia that keeps them out. But they're basically restricted to very soft waters, and we have very hard water.
Okay. Orlando Sarnelli is a limnologist and ecologist in MSU's Department of Fisheries and Wildlife. We're talking about a microorganism in some inland Michigan lakes, primarily way up north, that causes slime and throws off the food web. As you pointed out a minute ago, there were also out-competing other microorganisms that you have referred to as the lawnmowers of a lake. What interesting image. What are those, and what's happening between those two species?
So the Daphnia is what I guess I refer. I don't remember saying that, but that seems reasonable.
Everything lives online. Exactly. You know, that's the challenge for you.
So they're the herbivores. So like a sheep would be like a living lawnmower. The Daphnia are lawnmowers, and that they're eating the primary plants that grow in the open waters of lakes, which are the algae or phytoplankton. And they are very, very effective. And if you look in that article, I guess it's called the Great Lakes Echo, you can see a couple of pictures of a lake with and without Daphnia. And it's an amazing difference.
That's right.
The color of the lake.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Talk about the effect of calcium on these plankton. And what is calcium exportation?
Calcium exportation has to do so the minerals dissolved in water in a lake are a function of what's in the watershed. So the rocks and the soils and the vegetation in the watershed. And apparently, and again, this is not something that I studied directly, due to previous activities, due to logging, historical acidification, that sort of stuff. Calcium has, I think, been exported from watersheds so that there isn't that much left. Or when you take the trees out, you take a lot of calcium out of the watershed. And so there's less coming in to the lakes themselves. And so these are lakes that had very low calcium to begin with. And now they have even lower calcium. And that's what's giving the advantage to this jelly zooplankton.
Your primary academic interest is the interaction between aquatic organisms, which can immeasurably affect the ecosystem of a lake, but which the public tends not to be as aware of as maybe Asian carp or sea lampreys or things like that. Is it ever frustrating all the attention that the big critters get when something the size of a pencil point can completely change the chemistry and food chain of a body of water?
I don't know. As long as I can still get grants to study what I want to study, it's not so bad.
Well,
I personally don't get frustrated by that.
Yeah.
But certainly, I mean, if you're interested in water clarity, then these interactions in the microbial world are where it's at.
Orlando Sarnelli is our guest. Again, Orlando is a limnologist and ecologist in MSU's Department of Fisheries and Wildlife, and we're talking about a microorganism in some inland Michigan lakes that causes slime and throws off the food web. While we've got you, you're also an expert on the kind of algae blooms that make for water quality problems in Lake Erie and other places. I've heard a lot of news stories that I'm not sure are quite on the mark, calling the problem toxic bacteria and toxic algae and so on. Help us understand the exact nature of what happens when, like last summer, there was an issue with the water in Lake Erie near Toledo that affected drinking water in southeast Michigan. What's going on there?
Well, just to back up a second, the confusion stems from the fact that the organism, the plant that produces the toxin, its common name is blue-green algae, but it's actually a cyanobacterium. So algae have cells like we do. They're higher, less primitive, more advanced cells, eukaryotic cells. But cyanobacteria are bacteria, you know, like the Staphylococcus bacteria that runs around on your skin, only they look and they act and they function just like algae. They're big cells and they're photosynthesized and they're just basically plants functionally. So that's where the confusion comes in, is they're technically bacteria, but they function like algae. Anyway, they produce the toxin. So that's what was occurring in the western basin of Lake Erie. I guess it was last year when they had all the headlines. I don't know the exact details. I know that a toxic bloom occurs in the western basin of Lake Erie every summer. Maybe this was a particularly large bloom. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that since the bloom can be blown around the lake because it tends to collect at the surface, that it may have been a very high concentration near the Toledo water intake. But they had high levels of toxins in their water. I don't know if it was their finished water or their intake water. It must have been the finished water because they told people not to drink it. So, but the point is that these blooms occur every summer, and just some summers they're bigger than others, and some summers they may be in a slightly different place in the basin. So,
lawmakers in Ohio are working on legislation to control fertilizer runoff into Lake Erie to avoid the blooms. Do you think that'll help?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a lot harder to do than the first round of nutrient reductions in the Great Lakes, where we just had to get the nutrients out of domestic sewage, which comes in a big pipe. Now you're talking about nutrient input that's coming from the entire watershed, the entire landscape. So it's very diffuse, and basically every farmer has got to get on board with altering their practices to reduce the amount of fertilizer that leaves the farm, which is where you want it, and goes into the lake, which is where you don't want it.
How do you view it as a Great Lakes-wide problem, or is it more localized?
The western basin of Lake Erie is really is one of the hot spots. Saginaw Bay has blooms from time to time as well. I don't think they're as severe. And there may be some other local bays and coastal areas of the Great Lakes where you get these blooms. I think in Lake Ontario there's a couple of bays as well. But it's not something you're going to see in the middle of Lake Michigan.
Now, doing your work, how often are you just in your lab here at Michigan State, and how often are you actually out in the field? That's a poor choice of words, I suppose, when
no,
you study
fine.
Water. You're out in the field in some lake somewhere.
Well, me personally, I spend a lot less time in the field than I used to because the sun doesn't agree with my skin. But my students are out all the time.
Okay.
Because they're a lot younger.
Okay. Well, Dr. Orlando Sarnelli is a limnologist and ecologist with the Michigan State University Department of Fisheries and Wildlife. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks a lot.
This segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday as part of our partnership.